welcome along, everybody. Thank you to the patrons for our questions. We're doing a Q&A, and then we're going to share it widely with everybody once the patrons have had a good listen. And they also get to ask questions. So if you want to join in, you want to support the pod, we also do some Patreon-only podcasts when we round up other stuff and European games and the odd Q&A and all of that kind of stuff. It's patreon.com/lhell. Oh, right then, Terry, we've got some questions. Well, I just first one in, basically, was Julian, so thank you. Kindly says, loving the pod. Everyone's really nice about it, so thank you very much, everybody. Question for the international break. Any info as to why Pau Torres wasn't called up by Spain this time? He's coming back from an injury, played 2 full games last week. He's been pivotal to our Villa side. Surprised by his omission, tremendous footballer. What would be interested in your thoughts on him? So, Terry, why Pau Torres is not in the Spain squad?
Well, first and foremost, let's say the questions are fantastic, and I appreciate them. I learn stuff from looking at the questions that the Patreons put into us. So it's really something I really enjoy. Regarding Julian's question, Pau Torres, I'm really, first and foremost, I'm happy that he's doing well and he's appreciated at Villa, because I think he had a difficult start. And it's only been this season, really, where I think Villa have seen the latter part of the season, he's settled down. And because at the beginning of the season, when he first joined, he was getting criticised and there were mistakes, and it was the defensive high line of Unai Emery, and he was the one that was playing people on side. And I think as the season's gone on, the supporters have got to like him,
yeah,
to be honest.
They've got too many central defenders. I don't know when they're all fit. I don't know who plays in Villa. But still, it's not an Aston Villa podcast. So should he be in the Spain setup?
I think there's he should be considered. Laporte was in the squad. I'm looking at the current members of the squad. Lennon Wend, I think, is a definite.
Yeah.
Danny Vivian was called up for the first time.
He played against Colombia, didn't he?
Yeah, I would suggest maybe that Pau Torres is better than Danny Vivian. Pau Cabarsi was called up for the first time.
Yeah, came on, I think, didn't he, against Colombia?
So there's the four now that are currently there. And I'm looking after that and thinking Inigo Martinez is probably, if he can play on a regular basis at Barcelona, but that's a problem because Cabarsi is keeping him out. Pau Torres must be on the fringes of it. Maybe De La Fuente just wanting to look at Cabarsi close up. Maybe wanting to look at, give Danny Vivian an opportunity to have a look close up. And I think Pau Torres, I'd be surprised if Pau Torres isn't in the squad for the Euros.
I didn't want Cabarsi in. I think he's a great talent and all of that. I just think, give these kids a chance to grow, and it's already enough of a spotlight playing for Barcelona. I don't think he needs to be playing international football when you've got Pau Torres then sitting at home.
Exactly. Yep. And there are other centre-backs. It's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, he's not one of those where they've got to nab him quick before someone else gets him and give him a cap. And these are friendlies anyway, but there is a race. I mean, you could say the same with England, with Kobbie Mainoo as well. He's been thrust into it, not in the original squad, but on the back of another good game for Man United, added to the squad, then gets a cap. It's a difficult one.
There's a big club bias in this, isn't there? It's just Man United, Barcelona.
Oh, totally. Always is.
Yeah.
Always is.
Yes. So have I prodded a nerve there? It was some rubbish Arsenal player, there were some good English strikers around there in your day, weren't there? Because obviously the Premier League the First Division was basically made up of homegrown players, wasn't it? Back in those days.
I think it was more prevalent then. It didn't hit a nerve with me in terms of my experience, but I just think it's always been the case. Even when I was growing up watching players playing for England before I started my professional career, there was always big club bias.
Yeah.
Player would get transferred from a small club to a big club and immediately go into the England squad.
That's the really annoying one, isn't it? When they didn't play for England, or I'm sure other countries have the same, but they didn't play. And then when they go to Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal or someone, they suddenly go in England squad. And he's not any better. He literally just had a transfer.
Same player.
Yeah.
But I think Pau Torres, I'm pretty sure he'll be in it.
Yeah.
But this was just a case of De La Fuente. Maybe his recent recovery from injury as well. It was maybe erring on the side of caution.
Yeah,
but
really
I'd be really
Kubasic.
surprised. I don't see those players being those four centre backs that are in this squad being the four for the Euros.
Yeah, but don't you need to be getting close to that now? I know it's an international manager.
Yeah.
It's quite tricky, isn't it? Because when do you get time? But I don't think there's much room in international football for experimentation. I think it's a bit of a... I don't think you've thought, oh, let's give him a go and have a look at him kind of thing. I think you just pick your best team because you've got so few opportunities to do so. And it's just about getting to the tournament and however get through the tournament you do. So I'm not like, oh, let's put some youngsters in for next time. It's not like, you're not a club. Just put your best players in now.
I think there's an element of not overdoing the players that are important to you as well during the season.
Yeah.
To make sure that they are...
Someone's played 50 games by now, give them a rest. I get that. Yeah.
And also, I think there is sufficient time before the tournament starts for international squads to get some continuity.
Yeah.
They do have a week, 2 weeks before where they're playing friendly games. They're training. They're in, training camp. In my opinion, after this international break, the less international games are better for me. I absolutely detest the international. I don't even know what day of the week it is anymore when we have an international break. I can't work out Saturday. What is today? You think there's no game Sunday?
International managers have got plans, Terry. Just because you don't know when to put the bins out, it doesn't mean that Luis de la Fuente and Gareth Southgate.
What use comes of them? I get the playoffs now. I get that. That's of course. But the friendlies, they're just fulfilling fixtures.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And I look at the momentum, particularly in La Liga. We've got a week of fixtures this weekend coming up. And then another weekend with no fixtures because of the Copa del Rey final.
There was a day, younger viewers, listeners won't remember this, when they played in England or played international just on a Wednesday, didn't they?
They're exactly.
Just, you played weekend, then they all played for England or whoever on a Wednesday, and then we're back at their clubs the weekend.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's how you got it done. Whereas now they've gone into these breaks, and I guess it's the proliferation of South American players in particular playing in Europe, isn't it? That's probably pushed FIFA into that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's better. I can't imagine it's ever going to change, or it's not going to change for a long time. But yeah.
I do have an idea how it could change.
Yeah.
Quite controversial.
Go on.
Do away with qualifying campaigns. Have a knockout tournament with 64 teams in.
Oh, right.
In the summer.
So what do you do about team 65?
The teams playoffs for the, I'm going to be polite here, the lower ranked, ranked teams.
So they play.
Playoffs.
Oh, I see. Like
so San Marino played Gibraltar or something.
Oh,
or,
so a bit like the Champions League that where it starts in July.
Yes. And then you have 64, 32, 16, 8, 4, 2 winner.
So you seed it.
So
Argentina, Brazil, England, Spain, Italy.
No, I'm saying in the Euros.
They all come later. Right. Okay,
and then maybe,
right,
in the Euros.
Yeah.
Because we have all these random fixtures and the in the European Championships, the big teams, it's the same teams in the they extended it, but it's the same teams that can be in the last 16, the last 8, the same teams qualify. They go through all that 2-year period of pretty dull games. Various ways of saving them if they don't make it through.
Yeah. You rarely, especially the Euros now they've expanded it, rarely lose a big nation.
Yeah.
I like the Nations League because it's actually competitive. And there's these what appear to be random internationals going on currently. San Marino played St. Kitts and Nevis the other day. I don't mind. That's good. I mean, you don't have to watch it. If you don't want to watch it, fine. But I think that's better than San Marino playing Germany and losing 10-0.
Yeah.
What is the point of that? That's a fair question.
I think a knockout format would be great in the summer. I mean, you get the FIFA, UEFA, the big nations will argue, oh, we want more games. That's what it's all about. More games, more money. But if you seeded it and you had, you just straight,
So when would you have
pick a country?
So when does San Marino play Gibraltar in your? So for the 2028 Euros,
none of those players are playing Champions League football. They're not overdoing it,
right?
Physically.
So the 2028 Euros. When does the qualifying start for San Marino and Gibraltar?
Doesn't have to start massively early, does it? If you're looking, I don't know how the format would work in terms of which 64 were to go straight through to the knockout stage.
Right, yeah.
Maybe something like 50, top 50 going in the seven games, 14 teams to fight, something like that. I haven't done the maths.
But yeah, there aren't 64 European nations to be there. I think there's only 55. So actually, Oh, so you're basically just having like a Champions League of international teams?
In a month.
Yeah. Oh, right. Oh, I see. Right, yeah.
Yeah. So if you win it, you'd be playing five games still.
Yeah.
So something like that.
Right.
No, and not home and away, not too.
So therefore, right. So you wouldn't need to start too early with your San Marino, Gibraltar, and see who gets through into the knockout. Yeah. Okay.
And then you seed it.
Yeah.
And then you know, so the big clubs played as big clubs, big nations played as smaller nations. They should be going through. If not, we might see a knockout. Might see a Coventry City in a semi-final. We might see, you know, someone that doesn't normally get there, they get a decent draw and underdogs and get a run going. Whereas even in the Euros, we'll see the group stages. We all love watching it, but they'll be predictable who goes through. There'll be very few upsets. So I just think it would.
Yeah, okay. Well, let us know what you think, football. Everybody. Terry's reworked international football. I like it. We'll get to Coventry City again later, believe it or not, in the La Liga Weekly podcast. Richard first, though. Thank you again, Richard. And Astor Valverde, he says, has got Athletic rocking. This weekend could be a famous one for them. Do you think he has overachieved with the tools at his disposal? What do you think is the secret to his success? Will they win on Saturday? Is it Saturday? Real Madrid, is it Sunday? It might be Sunday.
It's Sunday.
Sunday night, yeah. And will they get four?
Oh, do you know what? Yeah, I think they will. I think they will get top four. Do I think, Richard, that he is over succeeding? No. I think that everything's come together nicely. And a lot of it is down to Valverde. I don't want to take any of the credit away from him. Mm-hmm. But there's things he's done that have paid off, that are working out. And Guruzeta is the obvious choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been a long time since Ertzaiz and Llorente and Adaris that they've had a genuine centre-forward. It's taken Guruzeta a while for someone to trust him. Valverde eventually showed that trust. And because he's done so well, it allows Nico Williams and Iñaki Williams to flourish. Then you've got Sanchez just behind them. He has an array of decent centre-backs, good full-backs, good midfield, really good midfield players. I don't think they're overachieving. I think I genuinely thought at the start of the season with no European football, if they could find that pattern where Guruzeta plays constantly and consistently picked, as opposed to we're going to play Iñaki up front this week, we're going to play him on the wing, we're going to play him back up front next week, and Sanchez, you can have a go up front. I thought if they could overcome that, then I genuinely thought without European football, I knew I was convinced they would get at least, you know, Europa League.
Yeah.
And as the season has gone on, I've always been convinced they were in the hunt for top four. Do I think they'll get top four? Yes. Do I have fears now for Girona? I do.
Yeah.
I think that the gap isn't that significant, that it's not something that Athletic Club can't do, and Atletico. So there's a decent race on for the top. And it's not just Atletico and Athletic. I think Girona have to be they're in the race again now. They're tied to race for so long. But now their focus has to turn to doing their utmost to remain in the top four. So I think Athletic Club are fantastic shape. Excellent manager. And I'm pleased for him and the club. You know, we need a vibrant Athletic Club.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an amazing story, always Athletic, isn't it? It's wonderful to see them do well. And it just, for me, I always say this, it just exposes the ludicrous financial transfer market that you basically don't need any of this because this club doesn't do anything like that at all. And they're good, a reasonable chance to qualify for the
championship. They put a big players in last summer. Ruiz de Galarreta on a free from Mallorca. That was it. The market.
The smaller clubs in the region would dispute that, and they would point out who they've nicked from Osasuna over the years and who they've nicked from Alaves, etc. over the years. But as an outsider, I think it's amazing. I would say minor overachievement. I think I'd have said fifth, sixth, or something. So if they get fourth, I think
if they do get top four, that might be an overachieve. And yeah, but I think there's always room, that there's always that one space available, isn't
there? Fourth is up for grabs, isn't it? Yeah. Because especially if you said who's going to finish fourth in 5 years from now, you'd probably say Sevilla should, but they messed it up so much in the last couple of seasons that very few people predicting Sevilla would be fourth.
So if we're at the start of the season, we're thinking top three, Atletico, Barca, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
No particular order. Fourth, then you're looking at the beginning of the season, before it started, still would have said Sevilla, still would have said Villarreal. Real Sociedad probably would have been the favourites because they've done it recently and looked to be in good shape going in towards this season. Betis, it's the usual ones, an Athletic Club. And I don't think, even at the start of the season, that I would have thought, Athletic, they've got no chance. I genuinely thought that the top four was up, the fourth place at least was up for grabs. And I genuinely thought that Athletic Club were in that race on equal terms with any of those clubs we just talked about.
Yeah.
No one thought Girona were going to do what they were going to do. So that's upset the predictions and the form books. But no, I thought Athletic had a really good chance because of no European football.
Yeah.
I thought they had a good chance this season.
Let's do another couple of club-related ones. So, Kelvin, what do you think Sevilla should do in the summer with QSF, Kike Sanchez Flores?
Took me a while to work that one out, I have to be honest. Quarter semi-finals, I thought. Quarter-finals, semi-finals?
stick with him or make a change. who would you like to see replace him, if so? And Garcia Pimienta, you suggest, or do you have another season at Las Palmas like Rola did at Rayo? So what are you sticking with Kike Sanchez Flores?
I think I would.
Right.
I think I would, because I don't think Sevilla need to run a risk. Also, Garcia Pimienta, I'm not sure if I would jump at the opportunity if I was him. And this is down to the fact that how things are going at the club at the moment. It might not be the best time to become a manager of Sevilla if you're an up-and-coming manager looking to, to enhance your reputation, because no one's made it work since Lopetegui left. No one. And they've gone through manager after manager, and all must have something about them to be given the opportunity at Sevilla. So I think at least Kike Sanchez Flores knows the background there, knows what he's working with. As long as they avoid relegation, of course, and that's not given.
Yeah.
But I don't expect them to go down. But the last couple of results haven't gone their way. They've been bad. I think it needs a little period of a settling down period now for Sevilla. And if he keeps them up, he's an experienced manager that, as I say, knows the club now. And perhaps it would be best just to, rather than rush into another change, Diego Alonso came in, we didn't know too much about him, bang, he's gone. Managers have come and gone too frequently at Sevilla now. So I think a period of stability with QSF.
The caveat being 9 games to play. So he's sort of playing for his future in a sense, isn't it?
Totally.
If they do really badly, they could do really badly and stay up, couldn't they? If Cadiz hardly win a game now. But I think then does he stay? If they look to the end of the season with another 6 points and stay up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that we have seen signs they're getting better. The signings have been better. And they've moved players out, which helps. More players will be needed to move out. It's an old squad that needed freshening up with younger players, and they're going that way. So, I agree with you. It's not about just staying up. I think there has to be an element of doing it comfortably.
They could be up already, literally, couldn't they? Because Cadiz got 22 points with 9 games to play, and Sevilla is 6 points better off. It's feasible that Cadiz just get 5 more points in those 9 games. It's not ludicrous, that is it?
No.
2 wins. And there's a 1 win and 2 draws. And how many is that? 5 or 6 defeats. That's not basic. That's their form.
Yeah.
So
Pimienta, I'm not sure. I mean, I think Pimienta is doing such a good job at Las Palmas, taking them up. Really good showing in the first half of the season. They've just tailed off a bit now.
Yeah.
But there will be bigger jobs for Pimienta. His reputation is growing. So I think when you're in that position, you don't want to make that mistake.
Easier
like Graham
jobs.
Potter or something.
Yeah.
Like a Graham Potter where you go, yep, that's the one for me. Even though it's a turbulent club.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in there, trust my ability. It goes horribly wrong, and then you is a setback for a manager's career. Yeah. So I think stability, a stable job, stable club for one of these up and coming managers like Pimienta, it's really important they choose that they make the right choice when they do get an opportunity to move on to a more established La Liga club.
So Lucas wants to know about Betis while we're doing clubs. What the unusual choices, he says, with squad turnover explain their failure in Europe? I keep believing Edgar, Juanmi, Canales, Luis Felipe would have made a difference. Instead, they're relying on an ancient Socrates and Petzela. And while Isco has been immense, I still imagine him next to Canales ripping defences to pieces. So what about the... What's Betis's? I mean, it's nothing disastrous about Betis. You know, they're
no,
they're
recent
okay.
Form is...
Yeah.
Recent form has been really disappointing. Recent results have been disappointing. There appears now with Pellegrini to be confusion because they've accumulated so many good players.
Mm.
I mean, players are coming off the bench now, you know, and the other week I went, oh, Asana Diel, forgot about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been talking about all the other players that Betis have signed, you know, the Chimi Avila and Ayoze Perez at the start of the season, and then, you know, Fekir coming back from injury, Isco's there, and you're thinking how we got from, you know, Betis looking so exciting with such a good group of players to they look bewildered a little bit at the moment. You know, I think up front at the top end, centre forward is probably a must. Borja Iglesias went out when Jose had one of his good spells where he goes on a goal scoring run. And then you seem to, Pellegrini seems to think, oh, this is the player that we've been, you know, we've been waiting for. But that happens with him. So that's something in the future to look forward to. It's, but Cambu came in. We haven't seen too much of him yet. There's loads of good midfield players. You know, you're looking at the all of midfield players that you think, well, how's he going to pick two of those? There's an abundance of really good players. Maybe at the back, Lucas has a point about the defensive players, but Pizzeri is back. Chaddy Riyad looks to be decent as well. I'm a bit bewildered, actually, mystified as to why Betis, having had a really good transfer window, have suddenly don't look very good. Their best performance was against Atletico Madrid, and they still lost. So I think I'm intrigued as to why things are not going particularly well at Betis at the moment. As you say, it's not disastrous. European football is still a possibility, which is probably the par for the course for Pellegrini and Betis. But I look at their squad of players and I'm excited. I want to see, you know, the quality that should be evident. And so far in the last 6 weeks or so, we haven't seen that from Betis.
Martin has a question, more for me than you, actually, unusually. Not a La Liga question as such, he says. John in particular often talks about XG. And whilst I know what it means in terms of expected goals, how has it worked out? Who calculates it? And is there one universally accepted measure for each situation or match? How useful and reliable a metric do you think it is? It's a very good question. We do increasingly use it. The short answer is a bit. It's sort of useful. Should we... in loads and loads of weight on it. No. So how does it work? How has it worked out differently? And the companies are secretive about it. Is the answer. I would love a really good investigation into it. You know, like Monday Night Football or something.
Yeah.
Actually, explain. Get someone on from a company, and I know they're secretive about it because they want to use their models. Everyone thinks their model is the best. And actually sort of, in a way, justify it to us. Because there are flaws in it. There are massive flaws in it. I remember, I think it's a Luton game, and I think it's Chidoze Ogbene who scores the goal, where he collects the ball, it's a long ball, and he gets there, he races to it, and the goalkeeper comes flying out. It might be Brighton, if I remember rightly. And he gets a touch to it, and he's really fast, and he goes around, so he beats the goalkeeper to it. And by the time he puts it in, he's on the goal line. And so the XG is obviously virtually one because he can't miss; he's a yard out. But he wasn't when he got the ball. So how does XG account for that? We don't know because the companies don't tell us. So you know when Messi scored that goal against Getafe in the The XG on that, obviously, where he gets the ball.
You could have picked another 50 of those as well. Yeah, that's the most obvious one.
Yeah. So what, and the XG when he scores it is like, well, not a lot. Oh, no, so quite high, the XG. He should be scoring that, as a Con would say.
He's only got a goalie to beat. Yeah, because he's taken out 6 other players.
Yeah. So there are flaws in it. The reason I like it, though, is that it's so much better than shots on target. There's more shots on, well, or shots off, shots. Now, the more detail, the better, is mine. Because you look at a game and it's 1-0. I didn't see the game. So, Terry, tell me about Granada versus Sevilla. It was 1-0, right? If you've watched it, I'm more interested in your opinion than looking at the stats. But the great thing about these stats is you can't, you do the best job of anybody in that you do watch almost all of the Spanish football, but you can't watch all the leagues, can you? You're by your own admission. It means you there are gaps in your Premier League knowledge because you're spending so much time watching Spanish football. So if you then look at Luton 1, Spurs, Luton 1, Arsenal 0, you think, what happened there?
You could have said Spurs, John. I wouldn't have taken offense.
I was thinking that you do watch Spurs, to be fair. Don't you? So imagine you've got Luton 1, Arsenal 0. You want to know a bit more about it. The ideal is that you actually watch it. Second best if you watch the highlights. But when I'm compiling highlights, because I do work on highlights, I will look at XG before I compile highlights sometimes. Because if you haven't watched the 90 minutes yourself and all you're doing is sticking a goal or two in, so you might be putting 3 chances from a game in for a 1-0, I would look at the XG. And if the XG is massively higher for one team than the other, I won't go scrolling through looking for the rubbish chance that the losing team had. But I do think XG sort of works in that it does tell you who had roughly the most pressure and the most chances. And I think it's better than just measuring shots, because you can shoot from 30 yards and the goalkeeper can drop his cap on it and it goes down, tick, it's a shot on goal, which is it's pointless. It was a waste of a good opportunity. When managers occasionally, the great sin of XG is when managers use it to justify stuff, like Thomas Tuchel did. And someone else did it recently, didn't they? Whereas, oh, the XG is good. No one cares. Because if your XG is good, but your points are bad, then you need better strikers or better goalkeeper. It's almost as simple as that.
It is an interesting aspect of the game now, though, that it's taken so serious. Mm. What is it? And no one really can. I think we've all got some idea. I look upon it as goals that should have been scored.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if your XG is 3 and you haven't scored, then you can look at it and go, they had chances.
Yeah, yeah.
And they haven't taken them. Mm. So the level of chance is still subjective.
They measure, they all create this, and I don't know, I couldn't create one myself. I'm not tech savvy enough. So where the guy was when he hit the shot, where the goalkeeper was, and you calculate by their past model, so they put as much data in. So these models are obviously getting better the more data they put in. Do people normally score from there? So the obvious one is a penalty. I think it's something like 0.74, which means 74% of penalties are scored. It's the most obvious one because you know where the ball is and there's only one goalkeeper. That's a very high likelihood of scoring. And then you build it from there. Whose is the most reliable? The companies should publish their results. That's what they should do.
Yeah.
And then we'd know whose model was the best, wouldn't we? And the great one for me is that I think they should flash, when a COCOM says he should be scoring that, they should flash up the XG on it. Scored that. And the XG is probably 0.03 because he was running away from goal. And stuff like, I don't know whether, say, a cross comes in and it swings ever so slightly behind the striker, who then gets his head on it and tries to head it back towards the goal. I don't think XG would account for that. But that's a really difficult chance at that point, isn't it? Once that cross has just swung ever so slightly behind you, so you're heading it from 6 yards out and you think, oh, well, he should be scoring. But if you're running onto a cross and you head it 6 yards out, That's a much, much easier chance, isn't it?
Yeah,
And I don't know if
exactly.
I don't think XG would
Takes that
count for
into
that.
account. You say taking into account, and we have the Microsoft, isn't it? When the goal is scored, and it tells you immediately on La Liga
that
percentage of that who's scoring.
XG is better than that, isn't it?
But also, there's many of them I don't agree with, but you're saying taking into an account, you have to take into an account the player as well. But the percentage of scoring, because if Lewandowski's going for a header at the far post, and his probability of scoring is better than Isco having a header at the far post.
Yeah, but that's it's not XG doesn't claim for that though.
That's exactly percentage of scoring.
Yeah, because when you look at that, so the obvious question for Thomas Tuchel if he's saying Bayern Munich's XG is great. Is right. So why are they not scoring these goals? Yeah. Is the goalkeeper chucking them in at one end? Are they missing sitters?
Striker's not good enough. Yeah.
Would be doing better if you hadn't sold Lewandowski? Would you be doing better?
Yeah.
And you can break it down for individuals. Now again, you could quite reasonably, as an individual player, say, "Well, hang on, I contribute loads to this team." And okay, I missed a couple of big chances. That doesn't mean I'm awful. But you look at I've got a red mark now on my stats.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, there's certain free ones available. FB Ref is free and available if you want to have a look at it. And it is interesting and it does throw stuff up. And where I really like it is when I look at it and then I speak to you. And sometimes you can challenge on the basis of it. If I was a club director of football or a chairman or something, I might be saying, well, hang on, our defensive stats here are terrible. And yet you're telling me that you want to buy another striker.
Yeah.
That's a fair question, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So the answer, I think, Martin, is it's better than not having it, but don't over rely on it. And watch the games is better, isn't it? But again, if you want to buy a left back, you can't watch every left back in the world. You have to have a way of narrowing it down.
There has to be a starting position on the best 20 around the world in terms of statistics, and then look at the attributes that they bring that go
says,
with it.
There's this 19-year-old kid in Colombia. He's really good. What are you going to do? Dedicate a scout to go and watch him? Or are you going to say, well, give us some stats. Let's have a look at his data, and we'll see whether we can bother to send a guy to watch him.
That would be the starting point, wouldn't it? And then the next step is Y Scout, which will give you access
you have to pay for Y Scout, don't you? And that's a deeper dive into it. Yeah.
And then ultimately you then want to watch full games, maybe footage of full games somehow, which you can do now.
Yeah.
And then maybe you would hope some sort of real life experience watching the player.
Yeah.
I don't think all those boxes are ticked for quite a few transfers, but they should be. It shouldn't be too much effort for top-class clubs to be able to send someone they trust to go and finish off the scouting process and watch a couple of games, not just one, because you could turn up, someone could have the game of his life, someone could have an absolute stinker, there might be a reason, might not have been fit, all those issues. But even so, I found during my scouting, and I still consider myself to be some sort of talent spotter now, because it's part of the job that we do, that even when a player has a bad game, I can still take something from it in terms of things he did during the game, you know? And if I haven't seen those errors on a consistent basis, I would take that into account. But I would still be able to see, you know, things like his speed, attitude, you know, there's certain parts in the game where you think, even if a player's play bad,
so
you can see what makes him
a good player having a bad game.
You can do that. And, you know, there's loads of aspects towards scouting that need real life people. to actually go and see this stuff, you know, the statistics of some two players might be identical, but if you go and watch the two players separately, they might be two different players.
Yeah, we're doing away with real life people, Terry. We don't need them anymore.
AI is the way future forward.
Yeah, we'll have a wholly automated podcast for Spanish football. Right, While we're talking about players, Raphael wants to ask a question. He wants your thoughts on standout players from the teams at the bottom. So, quite reasonably, if he nominates Almeria, Granada and Cadiz, and then adds in Celta as a possibility to get relegated, who are you signing? Who are your bargains out of that lot? Who are you nicking?
Granada, are good going forward. I like Lucas Boyer. I really think he's an interesting player. Mm-hmm. I liked him at Elche. I know he's got previous in the UK with Reading many years ago where he wasn't a huge success. And that does tend to put people off. Who was the centre-back at Sevilla? Was it Reading? Danny Carrillo, was it? Carrizo?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes.
Was a midfielder, came to Sevilla, played centre-back, played in Europa League finals, and was a really good player. When I mentioned him to people in England, it was like, he was at Reading. He was useless.
He had only been there
for 6 months. It really does put people off if, as a younger player, they've been across to England and it hasn't worked out in a short period of time. That tends to be them written off for good. But I like Lucas Boyer. I think he's plays for teams that are not very good. Is he to blame for that? Partly, I guess. But I do like his attributes, his skills. I think he holds the ball up well. He works really hard. He's aggressive. He would be one I would be keen on. And I'm looking at the price. Mirto Nzuni of Granada looks a lively player as well. I know Brian Zaragoza has gone. So they would be my two at Granada. Almeria, I like. See, I'm giving away all this information. If anyone from clubs are listening, are Patreons, I like Mark Pubil, the right back. He was formerly Levante, where I thought he was an up-and-coming player, and they sold him to Almeria for, I think, decent money in terms of La Liga standards. I think he's a really good player as well. Big, strong, powerful, quick, athletic right back. That would be my one from Almeria, if I'm being honest. Some of them I thought a year ago, if you'd have asked me, there might have been more, but I think their performances this year haven't been as consistent, clearly. Celta would be the one. I mean, Cadiz, I don't think there's an awful lot of Cadiz. They've got a lot of experienced players. They've tried to freshen it up with the younger players that they've brought in, and maybe players like Wanmi. Darwin Machis has always been a player that he's not even getting playing time at Cadiz now under Pellegrino, which I find really surprising. Brian Ocampo looked good earlier in the season and last season. He's not getting playing time. So there isn't an awful lot at Cadiz, I don't think. I think if they go down, I think Wanmi will probably get another La Liga club, I think, because he's proven quality in La Liga. But Celta is the interesting one, though. I think Mingueza would get another La Liga club. Strand Larsen, I think, in particular, is a really good. So out those Celta players, there might be a few more that might be deemed to be La Liga players, but I think Strand Larsen is particularly good. I think they paid about 10 million for him, which is a lot of money for Celta. I might be wrong; it was around that figure. But he scores goals. He's the classic stereotype. Nuisance up front, big centre forward. So he would be one of those at Celta I would be looking at.
Good answer. Any other suggestions, feel free to send them through as Patreons via your messaging service. You can message us or just put it underneath the post, and or you can eat Twitter. Well, what am I? Driscoll FC. That's X, as it's now known. And what are you, Terry? Terry Gibson, 88.
Yes.
Yes, there we are. So if you want to join in, feel free. Right, Jackie, thank you for your message. However, we're not going to employ him as our legal counsel. I love, because he's talking about, let's put it this way, there is a corruption probe. Rubiales is facing an investigation. And yes, we do have to be careful what we say on a public platform. Yes. So interesting points. But generally, we don't know. We don't know. We don't have an investigative arm of the La Liga Weekly podcast. So
we don't want to lose the poor guy's job in the Dominican Republic.
Yes, after everything he did in taking the Spanish Super Cup to Saudi Arabia, and this is how we repay him. right, Stu asks a question. Right, First one is, what are your thoughts on the Coventry versus Manchester United FA Cup semi-final? Answer that one quickly.
I have to be honest. I play for four clubs, main clubs.
Yeah.
And Spurs was my boyhood team.
Yeah.
I'm proud to have played for them and proud to have played for Man United. But the two other clubs I represented, Coventry and Wimbledon, they've had such a hard time for the last 20 years. So they're really close to me. I have a lot of affection for those two clubs in the way that they've battled back from ridiculous situations, you know, that were out of the hands of the supporters. I'm royally treated by both sets of supporters. I've always been supportive in public for those two clubs. And I can't answer that any other way than I would love to see Coventry in a cup final. I know I played for Manchester United and was proud to play for United, but United have been there in the past, the recent past. They'll be there in the near future. This happens, it's happened once in over 100 years for Coventry, where they've got to a final and won it. So I would be lying, and I don't want to sit on the fence. I would love to see a Coventry win.
Can I ask you another question? Why not appoint Mark Robbins as the manager of Manchester United?
We know why. We spoke earlier about the big club favouritism towards international call-ups. It's the same with managers. And managers, some managers don't get opportunities. And, you know, if his name was Marco Rubinho, it might help. But, you know, managers come from abroad with a reputation that won't be as good as Mark Robbins.
It's weird, isn't it? Because Gareth Southgate has been linked to it, isn't he? Now, we can debate Southgate's how his performance as England manager. Pretty good. You know, England have done well, but with good resources. Mark Robbins, people around the world probably don't even know who Mark Robbins is, do they? That's the truth of it, because he took over Coventry. As Terry said, they've gone through all sorts of financial, terrible mismanagement of the club. They're in the bottom division.
No home.
Playing away from the ground or with no money, no resources, dragged them up to the point where they were a playoff final away from the Premier League last season.
That was a big achievement. This season is slightly different because they sold their two best players for a lot of money. And Doug King, the new owner of the club, has given the Mark Robbins the money to spend.
Yeah.
So that's
you know. But they started slowly this season. But now
started slowly. Yeah.
They're really hard team to play against. They're not the prettiest team, in truth, Coventry.
Yeah.
But they are really effective. Anyway, there we are, Midlands football podcast.
I'm glad I answered that favourably, one way or the other.
Right.
I could have said, I like both teams, but no, United have won millions of things, and they're going to be challenging every season. Coventry is once in a blue moon. So
there was a spell where the FA Cup.
But I think United win.
But there was a spell where the FA Cup was getting to a point where the big clubs weren't dominating it, but they very much are again now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because they've got the resources to compete on all fronts. And they keep demanding that the rules are changed in their favour so that they are able to dominate every single competition. And it's somehow regarded as a scandal if smaller clubs are given an opportunity. Anyway, let's get back
I think United win, though. Yeah, I will be honest.
Well, you're back on that fence.
No. I would love to see a commentary an upset, but I can't see it.
Yeah. Stu's other question. How long are Barca's financial issues likely to go on? Why are the league continuing to cut their future budgets when the club spend has already reduced by 50%? Rather than crippling them further each year, wouldn't it be sensible to let the current restrictions play out over a longer time period? Right, we'll get into... Darren's got a question, a very detailed question about the FFP models. But answer that one. A Barca.
You can't do it for one club and not the others. That's the problem.
Yeah.
The rules are there in place for everybody. You can't make a special exception to Barcelona because they're an emblematic club of La Liga, and we need Barcelona to be spending loads of money, and we need Barcelona to be... That's unfair on the other clubs in La Liga. I was going to say unfair on all of them. It's not. I mean, the big clubs, they're all fighting for the same cause. But if other clubs lower down the pecking order are adhering to the rules, then there shouldn't be an exemption for one of the big clubs. So I think that's the reason why. And Darren's question is really interesting how it's playing out at the moment. It's difficult to see what Barcelona are going through, and it seems to get stricter and stricter and stricter. It's a blessing they've got so many good young players. Are they going to be able to keep hold of them all? Clubs will be willing to pay a fortune for some of them. So it is a tough period for Barcelona. It's interesting, though. Barcelona's still a massive pool. They're still a massive football club. I noticed recently they were in the top two, wasn't it, shirt-selling clubs around the world. In terms of shirt sales around the world, Barcelona were in the top two. It's a massive football club, but it's the laws are so strict in La Liga. We can debate whether they're good or bad.
Shall we?
I'm a mixture of both, to be honest.
Right. Let me ask you Darren's question. Right. So Darren has sent it. Right. First of all, thank you, Darren. So he sent one through an anecdote about people saying the Premier League is the best in the world and how frustrating it is. Okay, good point. A little point of clarification, because we were talking about Cartuja and the Copa del Rey final. What he points out is that basically they had a contract to do a couple, and because there were no fans in the stadium, that they basically knocked it on. So this
extended
this
was it.
The last, yeah, this is the end of the contract for games to be at Cartuja. But he also points out that both Betis and Sevilla are planning to renovate grounds. We've seen a lot of this in La Liga, haven't we? And it is a positive. Yeah. They're allowed to use that venture capital money to do up their grounds.
But they're not allowed.
Yeah, they have to. You can't spend it on a lot. And that's one of the things you can spend it on, isn't it? You can't spend it on your playing. There's a very limited amount on your playing.
But I think there's a certain amount of money set aside that you can use for infrastructure.
Yeah.
So the training grounds, redeveloping the stadium and stuff like that. That's brilliant. It's been crying out for
also,
that.
If you go on YouTube, there are the videos of Sevilla and Betis's ground plans. And so, therefore, both clubs will be using Cartuja whilst that work is done. So,
I've checked the videos because I was unaware that all this was going on. So, when I said at the start of the podcast, I'm grateful for the questions and the explanations from people and the information and the two stadiums at Betis and Sevilla, the city of Sevilla to have those two stadiums plus the one at Cartuja is going to be awesome. Hmm. I mean, I love both those stadiums, but in fairness, they have been tidied up over the years, but to be revamped in the way they are going to be when you see the footage, it's going to be sensational. And I'm proud of La Liga for what they're doing in terms of, because for many years I've been going, 20 years, going to stadiums in Spain, and I love the culture and I love the differences between Spain and England, but there are grounds where you go and you think this is falling apart. You know, or we joked a number of times this year, people are sitting there in the pouring rain with no roof.
Yeah.
And clubs and supporters are all guilty in the past, probably, of preferring to spend money on players than the stadium. But this is, was it the CV, voluntary?
CVC? Right, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, that came into play. Yeah. Money was set aside to each club for them to improve the infrastructure of their own club. But in general, Spanish football and La Liga. And when you see the new stadiums now, Levante are in second division, but they revamped theirs. Osasuna have revamped theirs. There aren't any better stadiums than San Mamés, than the Metropolitana, than the Bernabeu now, than Barcelona's is going to be. And then you had Sevilla and Betis. Apologies if I've missed anybody out. But these stadiums now, and you look at them all the way around the Liga, and it would encourage, the other complaint we have is that the grounds are not full. Well, if the grounds are this comfortable and you can go and spend in a day 6-7 hours either side of the game, you know, the build-up, post-match, watch the game of football and spend 6 or 7 hours there and not get soaking wet, have to rush off and get home, then the stadiums, it will attract more supporters. So I think it's one of the reasons why supporters we do see empty spaces in stadiums, because a lot of the stadiums haven't been fit for purpose. But I think if you make that experience a whole lot more enjoyable, then I think it's great for La Liga. When you see Betis Stadium and the Sevilla, the new versions, they're going to be incredible. And when you add them all to the other stadiums that have already been done, then we're beginning to see it's always been an elite league, but it would look like an elite league. When you switch the telly on and it's a fabulous stadium, it's going to look totally different. So what the direction La Liga is going,
yeah,
we complain about the laws. They're too strict. I get that. But they're doing some really good work. 20 years too late, I would hasten to add. Right. Maybe this should have been done when Barcelona and Real Madrid were playing 15 of the best players in the world in a Clásico, and Messi and Ronaldo and Pep and Jose and stuff like that. They always thought then that they never made the most of that golden opportunity, Spain winning three tournaments on the trot. But what I see now from La Liga and Javier Tebas and the clubs is a league that off the field is doing its utmost to match what has been achieved in the Premier League.
Right. Let me put Darren's question then, because that was sort of background information. So the question, I've been going back and forth on this for a while, he says, what are your thoughts on the Premier League's profit and sustainability approach to tackling club finance compared to La Liga's FFP? All the discussion about the failed breaches and points deductions have clouded the appeal of the Premier League this season. Doesn't feel particularly satisfactory. The clubs like Luton don't know where they are in the table. With La Liga, Darren says, its model has crippled every club bar one being able to compete in the transfer market and deprived the league of Lionel Messi's final years, all while the rules are seemingly made up and changed as time passes. However, part of me actually prefers La Liga's intentions in that it prevents clubs getting into trouble rather than reacting after the event. And seemingly less attractive product on the surface now, because of the restrictions, it will sustain the health of clubs in the long run, which is what the previous discussion about the improved infrastructure. That's what Tebas wants. He wants in the long run, rather than pissing away money on transfers, chasing transfers, sacking a manager, bringing him six players in, blah, 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 blah. But here's the question, and I share Darren's dilemma. So the answer is I don't have an answer to this, because I also
go back
and forth. I go back and forth on this, right? It is entirely unsatisfactory, the Premier League model at the moment, isn't it? What's happening in the Premier League that we don't know.
It's more than unsatisfactory. It's a massive story which hasn't got enough traction.
Yeah.
It's only going to happen. So, that traction is only going to happen at the end of the season.
So when, if you're not following it, Nottingham Forest had a 4 points deduction, which takes them below Luton in the table. But Everton had a 10-point deduction that was then partly reduced. They could have another one coming for more breaches. So they're breaching profit and sustainability rules.
It's a shambles.
But what's happening, it's coming after the event. So they're looking at it and saying, right, you broke the rules. Here is a points deduction. But it just seems to be, there's no time frame on this. So I think it's right in terms of what's the answer. I do think it's easy. There's some easy wins with the Premier League model, which would be you put a time frame on it. So we're going to look at your books from this date to this date. You submit them by X date. So say September the 30th, pluck it out of the air. So submit your rules by September the 30th, your books by September the 30th. We'll pass any judgments by October the 31st. You've got until November the 30th to appeal. Points deductions done in December. And that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, but getting there is the clubs are taking it on them. They're taking legal action against the Premier League, in the case of Leicester.
Yeah,
and that's going to make that a shambles.
Yeah,
will do all they can to backlog it, to delay it.
You've got to stop them doing that, because when you sign up to be part of a sporting competition, you've got to accept their law. Otherwise, there is no point. It's not like you and I running a business or running our ordinary life.
But they've always got excuses. The excuse came from Nottingham Forest that we had to wait to sell Brennan Johnson because we got 20 million more. But that's tough.
That's
probably why you were offered that transfer fee, because the other club knew that, I don't know who the clubs were, I know you went to Spurs in the end, but someone else came in and made an offer. They didn't find it acceptable. But that club probably knew that Forest had issues with the money they'd spent and stuff like that. If they'd have taken that 30 million, they wouldn't be in this position. But no, they wanted to wait until they got 50 million, which took them past the date. And now that's their argument. It's not an argument. It's not a defence. Well done, they got another 20 million from Spurs because, but it's not a defence. And
if you tied that with the inland revenue, you would get, put it in because I wanted to wait. It's not an argument, is it?
Exactly. So the clubs there's a lack of respect from the clubs.
Yeah.
This is not just the ones caught, this is a number of them that are in that territory. That they will appeal it, but as you say, if you're part of an umbrella that has the laws that are for the same for every club, it's being brushed under the carpet. But worldwide, people must be looking at the Premier League now and thinking, even Leicester, I mean, recently title winners, and now they're looking at are they going to? It looks like Leicester will be allowed to go up, and then points deducted if they're guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that shouldn't be the case.
Yeah, so whoever finishes third in
the
championship,
benefit from it.
Mm, yeah.
And, okay, we lose points. We might get points deducted next season, but we still think we can stay up with that. There's other clubs. And but I like the idea of La Liga stopping it, preempting it before this. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
I've heard it mentioned on television now in this country that, hang on, this is a problem. Every season could be like this now, where clubs think they can get away with it. And there are other clubs that are under, investigation that are being checked out. So it might not just be, it might be next season as well. Clubs are getting suspended points. Who wants, no one wants to see a league where it's you won and lost. We were speaking just before the podcast discussing this, and you made a point that this affecting the relegation battle. But can you imagine if it affects the title race in the future?
Yeah. Why would it not? Because Man City have got these 115 charges hanging over them. When is that ever going to be dealt with? That's outrageous, isn't it?
I don't know enough about the case. I keep hearing the 115. And the only thing I think to myself is, well, how many of those 115 do they have to be guilty of? say they're guilty of 10. There are 105 innocent charges, but there's 10 that... What happens then?
It's gone on too long, hasn't it? It's insane that we've got this.
They won't be guilty of 115, but be innocent of 115?
Somewhere between 0 and 115 is all we know, is how many they're guilty of, isn't it? We simply don't know, and I don't know when we'll ever find out, and it's just outrageous. What's the point of having laws if you haven't got the capacity to prosecute the laws?
Yep.
No point, is it? So I suppose it comes down to the question, because with La Liga's laws, I think some of it is easily done, isn't it? It's like the stuff that Stu mentioned. Some of the Barcelona stuff does seem a bit random. It does seem a bit...
It's the Barcelona is the one that's confusing us all.
Yeah, and again, little caveat on this, Barcelona got themselves into their own mess. Okay, fair enough. But it doesn't. But the way out of it, the rules have got to be crystal clear. They can't just be, oh no, you're not allowed to do that after the event. That just seems so unsatisfactory that the club doesn't know what money they've got. And again, the last couple of seasons we've got to this stage with Betis as well, where you're getting to the point at the end of the transfer window where you register and we don't know whether they can register players. They've got big name famous players sitting there unregistered. Yeah. That's not right either, is it? That's insane.
I'm slightly confused when I see someone like Betis who get 50,000 supporters at every stadium, haven't spent hundreds and hundreds of millions and blown everything on transfers, yet they pay good wages to some of their biggest players. It's probably a big wage bill at Betis because, as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, they've got a lot of good players now. Mm. But it seems to be too cautious if a club like Betis, if Betis were getting 20,000, and spending all this money, I'd be concerned. But Betis don't. They get 50,000, most home games plus. So that's where I get confused at how strict it is. But I totally prefer this option of preempting it and trying to put laws in place so that we know at the moment the teams in the relegation battle. We know who's in the top four. In England, you're looking at it and thinking, well, Luton, Forest, Everton, anyone else that might be involved in a relegation battle, what happens if they get their points back? You might survive on the last day of the season if you're Luton.
Yeah,
and then Forest go and win an appeal and you get relegated. So you have all that, we see it. Surviving relegation is like winning the trophy for those clubs.
Yeah. All of that dancing around on the pitch the last day of the season.
You could be sitting on the beach in the summer and you're relegated.
Yeah.
because someone's won a court case and you know, you thought you'd done your job, you thought you were safe, you thought you played by the rules, you thought the other clubs were playing by the rules. And that, so imagine if that happens with the league title.
Yeah.
Next season or the season after. So it's a massive story, this Premier League issue.
I agree with you that I think instinctively, as we talk about it, I think I'd go the rules in advance model as opposed to, I don't really mind. I think both of them are fixable. And I think both have been done badly at the moment, I think is the answer. I think instinctively I would have the rules up front. I don't know whether you could do that as well. But here's the argument. One of the problems that La Liga faces is that competitiveness, isn't it? I think UEFA would have rules or FIFA, even if you want to do it on a bigger scale, would have the rules. Because the problem is, you've got the Premier League has this sort of growth model, hasn't it? Where they've let anything go almost. And what it's one part of the Premier League growth financially has been that it's been a bit of Wild West. And people,
and the power of the clubs around in the Premier League.
Yeah,
the Premier League don't have power over the clubs.
They
like to think they have, and they like to when it comes to these laws and rules that they think they have, but they don't. The big clubs have the power.
Mm, yeah, and it's grown. And the clubs are rich, and it's attracted a lot of inward investment because you've let sort of supply side economics, isn't it? And basically, you let anything go, and you just anything to grow the pot. Anything to grow the pot goes happens. All good. Bring it all in, and we'll worry about the details of it. What happens to it all later?
And supporters have to play their part as well. They're not interested in the laws. You know, they trust that someone at the club is not going to get them points deducted for doing silly things. Mm. But every transfer window, supporters want the club to spend money. Yeah. Criticise people that don't spend money.
So this is actually, you know,
so it's a wake up call for everybody in football. But that wake up call in the Premier League.
I like that wake up call because
yes, I do. I've been waiting for this to happen. Something like this to happen for years.
Because I know this is really unsatisfactory. I don't think anyone would argue it's not how it's been done this season in the Premier League. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it is good that you get into a situation where, because everyone was laughing at Nottingham Forest when they signed 39 players in the summer. And so I've got no sympathy for them. I've got sympathy for Luton, actually. Because it looks like Luton are played by the rules. And I get that the Forest fans, and particularly Everton fans, are saying, well, hang on, they haven't taken this into account. Everton fans argue that some...
What about other clubs?
Yeah.
What about them? What about them? Take care of your own club.
Yeah, but you should need absolute clarity. And I think if you're going to do it after the event in the Premier League model, you need to put dates on it. Yeah, I think it needs to be.
Oh, these tidying up massively.
Yeah, yeah. But again, you pay your tax to dates, don't you? It's in by this date, assessed by that date, pay by that date. And that's not unreasonable. So,
no.
And again, why we've ended up in a situation where these investigations just seem to be ongoing is just totally unsatisfactory.
Yeah.
So have we got an answer? We saw you prefer the... Sort out the how much money you've got beforehand.
Yes,
but also sort it out a bit and make it more transparent. Is that a reasonable summary?
Yeah, to the respective clubs.
Yeah.
So if you're a Betis and you're getting 50,000, if you're Barcelona, you're getting 80,000, you're selling £200 million worth of shirts a year. That has to be taken. I know it is taken into account to a degree, and maybe as Darren said, maybe I think it was Stu earlier, maybe a longer term look at it in terms of, okay, Barcelona have got these issues, these problems. We know you're not going to disappear off the face of the earth. You can't. So let's maybe do something, you know, but not just for Barcelona. Then it would have to be for all clubs and it has to be looked at.
It's a good point, isn't it? Give them a longer, but it does seem, it seems too...
Yeah, I don't think it's just Barcelona. I think for all clubs, it should be taken on a longer basis.
Every season shouldn't be a knife edge. You shouldn't be getting to the end of the transfer window not knowing how much money you got and whether you can register players. That's too chaotic.
We just abandon everything. Let it be like the Wild West, like it once was in every league. Take away financial caps and, you know, financial fair play.
Well,
there's an argument for that.
It brings the other question, doesn't it?
Which is, world,
does
you're it, rich,
Yeah. Does it lock in advantages for the big clubs, FFP or profit
Yeah,
sustainability?
it
Whichever way
does.
you do it, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Because
yeah.
you're saying you've got a bigger pot. Real Madrid have got a bigger pot to spend because they've got more fans. So they bring more TV, they sell more shirts, they sell more sweat, everything. And so they're always more like more able to spend
Richer.
money. It's the Altani problem at Malaga, isn't it? He was, I mean, who knows what he would have
Yeah,
done,
a
basically.
few have spoilt it for everybody, to be
Yeah.
honest.
But
That's the problem.
I suppose it's true, isn't it? So if you now came in and you bought Betis, if you had £1 billion and you bought Betis, you can't, as Newcastle, the Saudis are finding out Newcastle,
Can't spend it.
you can't just chuck in £1 billion. I think it's good, but it's another one I'm going around in circles on, actually,
Yeah.
if I'm ever fair, because it does ruin the market. But at the same time, the very strict rules, if you're not careful, it means Real Madrid will win the league every season if you're not careful. That's it's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there we are. So have we answered the question?
As I said, these questions are informative. I
Yeah.
find them really useful, and it
Yeah.
does concentrate your mind on other stuff in Spanish football and football in general. Because I in particular, the games every week, the analysing it and stuff like that, you just get focused on what's happening on the field of play. As I said, I didn't know about the new stadiums or the refurbishment of Betis and Sevilla, and I'm really excited about them when I look at
Yeah.
them. I think it's exciting times ahead for La Liga.
Yeah.
So these and Darren's questions, as always, really do open your mind up to the other stuff that's going on off the field.
Yeah.
And it's an important time in football. And as I said, I think it's not a scandal what's happening in the Premier League, but it's massive news.
Yeah.
It
Anyway,
really is.
we better stop because it's going to take about 3 hours to upload this audio. So I'm out there. But so, right, thank you very much for your questions, everybody.
As
It's been
always.
really interesting, and thank you for your continued support, Patreons. And we'll see everybody for a podcast. Probably going to do Tuesday, aren't we, Terry? Because of
Yes, big game Monday
Villarreal
night.
Atleti, isn't it? Monday night, isn't it? So yeah,
Yes.
right. Enjoy your football this weekend, and we'll see you all soon.